and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Monday morning in Manila and Sunday afternoon in the United States. Joining me from New York City, just before he heads over to Europe, is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, guys.
Just computed that next Sunday after the World Cup. Be very interesting. We're going to be spreader out. Anyway, joining us from Dallas, Texas. Well, they're thinking about nothing but basketball right now, I'm sure, in Texas and Labor Day weekend. It's Bam McMahon.
Howdy, partners. And as Coach Prime would say, my darn theme music.
Hey, I don't know if you noticed, but on the last podcast as a birthday present, there it was.
Oh, I noticed, baby. I noticed.
Well, he tweeted about it, bro. He was all over.
I was dancing, shaking my shoulders, doing a little shimmy.
Yes, he wasn't dancing tonight. Well, actually, I'll tell you who was dancing. The Lithuanian fans, in Manila, they stayed about 30 minutes after the game here tonight after upsetting Team USA by six, and cheered. And one thing that FIBA does that I like, I don't want to misinterpret the song, but there's some sort of Lithuanian national song they were playing after the game to just let them soak it all in. And, I approved of
those drums too.
They didn't have the drums.
They
didn't have the drums. Oh, no. You know, the thing I like about, Lithuania, I'm sure I'm not going to pronounce it correctly. I believe the way the Lithuanians pronounce it is Litvia. And their cheer is just Litvia, boom, 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 Litvia, boom, boom, boom. I respect a simple cheer, you know, like, I got a chance to go to an Arsenal football game last year in London. Their cheer is Arsenal, Arsenal, Arsenal. I like it. Okay. I like the simplicity of it. And those Lithuanian fans are really enjoying themselves.
Oh yeah.
Lithuania. Well, obviously we're going to talk about Team USA. Lithuania played an absolutely brilliant game that I witnessed here in Manila Sunday morning in the U.S. An absolutely brilliant game, and they absolutely deserved to win. And it was absolutely a great moment for them. As I wrote in my story, it is not the greatest moment in their basketball history. That would be in 1992 when they won the bronze medal, the year of the Dream Team, when they beat the, I think it was called the Unified Team, but basically it was Russia. They beat the team they just got independence from. It was Russia and whatever states were left in the Russian Federation, whatever it was called. That's their biggest win. But they did beat the U.S. at the Olympics in 2004. And so this is pretty big for them to do that. And they have been absolutely the best team so far at this World Cup. And
well,
they
are we going to say that
yeah.
for
no,
sure?
No, absolutely. Because what you're going to say Germany, right?
I mean, Germany is also 5-0 and just beat Slovenia by 30.
Now, I was going to say, listen, Bontemps ignited who's the best player in the tournament, Jay or Luka. Dennis Schroeder's raising his hand, say, hey.
Me.
Don't forget
we
about
that. We know Dennis thinks it's Dennis. That's for sure.
But back to Lithuania. Just want to give
Lithuania is number one in rebounding, and this performance certainly helped.
Ooh.
Number one in three-point shooting.
That helped again.
By a lot. And number one in point differential. And absolutely brilliant performance in this game. They made their first 9 three-pointers and 14 of 25 overall. Most of those first 9 were open because the U.S. was doubling. But anyway, we'll get to that in a second.
And they're doing it with the best player in the country not participating.
That's Monty correct.
This is not part of this. This is Jonas Valanciunas and a bunch of other guys, but their all-star is not there.
I will gently point out that Germany beat Slovenia by 30 with Franz Wagner not playing and beat Australia Wagner not playing.
Got it. I don't think Slovenia is the United States, with all due respect to Luka.
Ooh, controversy.
I mean, yes, I agree. But just giving the Germans a little bit of respect. They've had a heck of a tournament so far also.
The Germans played the United States a couple weeks ago and lost to them. They may play them this week and beat them, but your point is fine. Lithuania played one of the most brilliant games I've seen played in person in FIBA in my career.
I mean, honestly, the fact that they grabbed as many offensive rebounds as USA did defensive rebounds is insane. They absolutely bullied USA.
Oh, there's some insane stuff. They went
14-25 from three. I mean, but they absolutely punked Team USA. They, I mean, whew, stuck their tongue out in their face too.
We've been talking for a month about what are these teams' biggest issues, and it's interior defense A and rebounding B, and that killed them today. Obviously, Lithuania.
I don't even think the interior defense was as
well. But
they obviously had some.
It's part of it though, because like they were just getting obliterated at the rim. Like that's how you give up all these offensive rebounds. It goes hand in hand. And
well, obviously, let's put it this way: Lithuania started this game in the first quarter, 4 of 16 on 2-point shots.
Right, and they started the game 9 for 11 from three.
9 for 9, actually.
But it doesn't matter how many you miss if you keep grabbing the rebound.
Well, yes.
That's my point. Yes. They were getting stops, but they weren't getting rebounds. But anyway, you mentioned sticking your tongue out. So let me just say, I have a new favorite. Well, I have some favorite Lithuanians. So Drunas Ilgauskas, which I'm sure was very happy to see this. Sarunas Jasikevičius, one of the greatest Lithuanian players of all time. But I got a new one. I'm gonna botch this name.
Better you than me on the name. Go for it.
Vadas Karnisovas. Karnikoskas. Vladis Karnikoskas.
I mean, hey, this is like the Lithuanian 2-point shooting. He just keeps grabbing the rebound.
He played with Austin Reeves' brother, Spencer, in, I believe, a team in Germany last year. And he talked to Spencer before the game, and Spencer said, you should give... Well, hold on. I want to get the exact quote, because the quote is better when I say it word for word. He said, I played with Austin's brother, so I talked to him before the game, and he said, give him a trash talk. So I give him some.
Oh, he gave him some.
So Karnisauskas, God, I apologize. I just don't know how to pronounce it. I know Valanciunas.
Let me get Karnisauskas. I don't know. Vitus. Let's do that. Let's just go with the early. Let's just call V, because we might be screwing that up. VK. Oh, VK.
Yeah. I mean, look, I know Jokubaitis Valanciunas. I'm sorry, Motiejunas. Anyway, they were just attacking the U.S. in the post. And in this particular moment in the game, he posted up Austin Reeves. Now, he's got the Lithuanians had, 5 to 6 inches in certain matchups in this game.
Yeah.
They start 6'9", 6'11", 6'10", across the front. And then they bring Donatas Motiejunas, who's 7 foot off the bench, and Mandingas Kuzminskas off the bench, who used to play for the Knicks. He's 6'9". Motiejunas, former Rocket, former Pelican / Hornet, I believe. So anyway, this matchup wasn't that much. VK is 6'6", and Austin Reeves about 6'5". But he just bullied him. Just bullied him, backed him down, made a perfect move on him, got a 3-point play, and stuck his tongue out at him. And the Filipino crowd gasped.
Yeah.
Because they love Austin Reeves.
They were like, Austin Reeves, home state, they'd say he got taken behind the woodshed. And that was kind of a theme here, fellas. That was a theme. That was not the only time he got bullied on the block. But he did tie. He tied 2 World Cup records today, though. He tied a record for fewest rebounds in a game with 0 and most fouls in a game with 5. So he tied 2 World Cup records today.
Big day for Austin.
Austin Reeves fouled out in 12 minutes, actually 13. And Jaren Jackson, who we'll be talking about in a little bit, fouled out in 15. So obviously the U.S. was fouling like crazy.
Yeah, this was the recipe for how you – I mean, obviously, to beat the U.S., what do you have to do? You have to rebound the ball. You have to hit threes. And,
that was
what Lithuania did today.
We'll talk more about the individual part of the game. By the way, our guy VK, he also said that, in his life he has watched the 2004 – Lithuania's win in the 2004 Olympics in Athens 20 to 25 times. And he's like, now we have that. And so this is going to be a lasting moment, and it should be. They were terrific, guys. They had 9 different players make a 3-pointer. They had 6 different guys get at least 3 rebounds. which you might say, well, three is not that many. You know how many the U.S. had?
I think two.
Three.
Two. Three.
They had three? I thought they had two.
Mikal Bridges had three. Jalen Brunson had four. And Bobby Portis had five.
Okay, wait, right.
But Jaren Jackson Jr. is a starting center. He must have had at least.
We'll talk about
he
that.
He had
We'll talk one. About that in a minute.
Oh.
Okay. We're not going to talk about that in a minute. We'll talk about Jaren Jackson in a minute.
Can still talk about it in a minute.
Anyway, they had six guys who made over three rebounds. They had nine guys who made a three. They had five guys in double figures. They had like six guys who had at least two assists. I mean, they got production from up and down the lineup. It was a terrific performance. Nothing in this game that happened was a surprise other than the super hot three-point shooting. When they came into the game, they were the number one three-point shooting team in the tournament at 44%, and they weren't shooting five of them a game. They were making 11 of them a game. So they were coming in, rebounding the heck out of it, number one in rebounding, shooting the heck out of it, which is what they ended up doing. We know that USA is small. They have been small literally for years. It is a product, number one, of the lack of American big men. We've done this before on this pod. We've gone down the starting centers in the NBA. I don't want to do it again. You can do it if you listen to this pod. You know who the starting centers are. Most of them are not American. Some of them who can play center who are American are not who could be eligible. Like Karl Towns he's not a pure center, but he could be on this team. By the way, Dominican Republic got eliminated earlier today, so he's out. Have decided to play elsewhere. In 2019, the last time there was a World Cup, the U.S. was concerned about its size, so it took two quote-unquote big centers. It took Brook Lopez and Mason Plumlee, and those guys got destroyed, and the U.S. got destroyed, and they finished seventh. In 2021, for the Tokyo Olympics, they switched tactics and went to smaller, more mobile centers, Bam Adebayo and Draymond Green. JaVale McGee was on the team, but he didn't really play that much. I don't have this off the top of my head, but I speculate that Kevin Durant played more at center and that than JaVale did. But maybe he, I don't know, whatever. The point is they went with a different
JaVale style. Played even less than he did for the Mavericks last year in the first year of the three-year.
Before he was summarily dismissed that three-year last
deal?
Week.
What happened to that three-year deal?
Whoops.
Yeah, it's now a five-year deal because it got stretched.
Three-year deal with a problem. Art lasted seven games. Go on.
Anyway, the U.S. played with a different style in the Olympics. It worked. And so when they looked at their lay of the land this year, they said, you know what? We're not going to try to patchwork bigs in there. We're gonna play small. And yeah, they have Walker Kessler on the roster. He's played the least. And they have Bobby Portis, who's really a power forward who plays center. He played the second least.
And Kessler's minutes did not go well. Today, minus 10 and not very many minutes.
Well, they've been, as we've talked about a bunch, they've been playing Paolo Banchero at center, who is definitely not a center the whole tournament, including today. Yeah.
So it was funny. I asked Steve Kerr after the game about his decision to stay with this. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. This decision to stay with the smaller, small lineups. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, we played two bigs. We played Paolo and Bobby together and Paolo and Walker. And I admit, I just don't see Paolo as a big.
No,
I mean, I know he's 6'10", but he's not in my mind. I know he's been playing backup center. Steve is right. I'm not. But when I ask the question,
that's because he's not. That's because he's not.
Right. So like I was Steve kind of, not adversarially, but he kind of gave it back to me like, no, yes, we did play two bigs. And I was like, OK, I don't consider Paolo a big, but they leaned into this style. They know they're going to lose the rebounding battle in some games. They knew they were going to probably lose to Montenegro. They knew they were going to lose it tonight. Steve Kerr just believes, and I'm not making this up, he has said as much, that there are certain trade-offs that you're willing to do. And they are going to switch pick and rolls. They're going to switch pick and rolls, even if occasionally that leaves them in a vulnerable position, defending in the post. They're going to switch pick and rolls, and they're going to sometimes get beat up on the boards. And then they're going to trade that off with playing fast and quick and having guys who rebound the ball and they can run, which is what they like that Paolo can do, which is what they liked Draymond can do and what they liked Bam could do. They liked that. And so, and it works. And most of the time it works. Most of the time they win. But in this game, they didn't. And so we knew that going into this game. Okay. And we know that after this game. And Lithuania is probably the worst matchup for the U.S. in this tournament. Probably the second matchup at this point in terms of man-to-man is Germany because of their size. They have great size. Canada is probably the toughest matchup in terms of talent on talent. And Canada was razor thin from not making it to the quarterfinals tonight. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So of all the losses that the U.S. has had in recent international events, and they've lost in three straight tournaments now, this is not like a red alarm loss. It is an illustration of what they have to improve. And what they have to improve, number one, more than anything, is they've got to get better play from Jaren Jackson, period. There is no acceptable situation in which his production can be where it's been the last two games. And his production has been one rebound in two games, one. And in this game, in which he went, came in, and yes, he is not a center by trade. But when he took on this assignment, he understood he was going to play center. And he's had some good games for them. But when he comes into this game, he knows that this game, yes, if they play Germany later, yes, if they play Canada later, will be hard. But he knew that this was the most important game. He knew Lithuania was the biggest challenge. And guys, 24 seconds into this game, he gets a foul. He knows he's going to be in foul trouble almost every game. Mm-hmm. 24 seconds in, he gets a foul in a mindless reach-in on Jonas Valanciunas, like 18 feet from the basket. Maybe it was 20 feet from the basket. I couldn't believe it. And then 2 minutes later, he gets his second foul on a rip-through move, and he was frustrated at the call. And look, that's going to happen. It was not great, but I don't really blame him on that. But because of the really poor decision on the first foul, he is now on the bench. And in this game tonight, the U.S. was, even with him only having one rebound, the U.S. was plus 16 with him on the floor and minus 22 with him off of it. That is not acceptable for him to get one rebound. Steve Kerr talked about it after the game. He says he knows it, and Jaren knows it. And I like Jaren. He is a smart guy. He is a key player. He is a decorated player. He is a quality player. But that was absolutely not acceptable. And there is no real consequences in this loss. They were already in the quarterfinals because of other teams that lost tonight across the Pacific Rim. Three teams from the Americas lost tonight: Brazil, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic. The U.S. ended up actually having a quote-unquote positive night because they qualified for the Olympics out of this. But not acceptable for Jaren Jackson to have one rebound in two games. Not acceptable for him to not be able to play because he's in foul trouble.
So, but also not necessarily shocking. Like, one in two games is an extreme stat, but the two big flaws that Jaren Jackson Jr. has is a tendency to get in foul trouble, and he is a poor rebounder for an extraordinarily athletic 6'11", 240-plus-pound dude. He averaged 6.8 rebounds this year for the Grizzlies. That is by far his career high. Like, he's just not a good rebounder. I honestly don't understand why. Because he has all the physical attributes to be a good rebounder, but he's just not a good rebounder.
Well, I think it's partly because he's chasing blocks a lot. And he also, I think, is just, he's a lot like Miles Turner, right? Another guy that's a very good shot blocker who is not a good rebounder. And
he was on the 2019 team as well. I forgot about him. Apologies.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, look, this, you were right, Brian, in that this is a loss that isn't shocking because of the deficiencies that this current group of players has. But we have been talking about this the whole time. I understand Steve wants to have Paolo Banchero out there playing as a small ball center to push the pace and to score. And we've talked a lot about how good that second unit has been. They've also basically run that out there against teams that he just overwhelms people with his athleticism against. And the times they've played elite competition, it has gone very poorly. And it went very poorly today. I don't know what his plus minus ended up at, but in the meat of the game, before the final interminable minute and a half took an hour, he was minus 18 in like 14 minutes. And he
struggled. Who are you talking about? I'm sorry.
Banchero.
And minus 14. 17.
And it was lower. That lowered down over the last couple of minutes of the game because he was out there after Jaren fouled out. But this is the way they've leaned into playing. It's the way they have to play. But if they are going to play that way, they have to play a lot more physically. They have to get into guys a lot more. They have to gang box out, and they have to gang rebound, which they obviously didn't do today. And if they're playing a team like Lithuania or Germany, they're just going to get swallowed up on the boards, and it's very hard to overcome, as McMahon pointed out, giving up as many offensive rebounds as you get defensive rebounds. You basically cannot win an NBA game or any high-level basketball game if that stat is a true stat like it was today.
And when you get your butt kicked on the boards like they did, obviously the focus is going to start with the big guys. But who's the best athlete on the floor? Who is the best, the most impressive physical specimen in the World Cup by a mile?
You mean Anthony Edwards, who had one rebound in 29 minutes?
6'4", 225-pound physical freak Anthony Edwards, who was spectacular offensively. His 35 points gave them a shot to pull off a comeback. But, dude, you're built like a freaking linebacker. You're the best leaper on the floor. Like, you have to get more than a rebound, too. And how many minutes did he play?
I mean, look, he played 29 minutes. He had one rebound. Josh Hart is out there to be a energy guy.
Yeah, Josh,
to be on the
Josh
boards.
Hart. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Josh Hart is playing because he rebounds,
right,
even though he's undersized. He's had four. He's had four in the last two games total.
He had two rebounds in 13 minutes. And last game, as we talked about the other day, playing Montenegro, big physical team that obviously, you know, that game was a struggle for them on the boards also. Brandon Ingram, two rebounds in 17 minutes. Paolo Banchero, two rebounds in 17 minutes. Like, if you're playing center on this team and you're getting two rebounds in 17 minutes, like that, they just have to be a lot more physical against these high-level teams. And again, you're probably not going to have the other team shoot 56% from three. You're probably going to be okay most of the time. But this is a strategy, the way they're playing, that's a pretty high variance strategy. You're giving up a lot of rebounds. You're going to give up threes, and you could do that when you have Bam and Draymond Green, who might be the two most versatile defensive big men in the world, playing on your team. If you're doing it with a converted power forward as your backup center, and with Jaren Jackson, who gets five fouls in NBA games in about 25 minutes on a normal day, and you know got five fouls in 15 minutes in this game, like, This is what they're susceptible to have happen to them. And it's going to be an interesting week ahead.
Well, I would say also, Anthony Edwards, real quick, he had 35 points in this game, which sets the U.S. World Cup record. It was three short of the overall Team USA record, which Kevin Durant holds. He's holed almost every scoring record. So he had 35 points on how many shots? It's 26 shots.
14 for 26.
I'm going to tell you right now, he could have easily had 45 in this game. Like, there was like a number of different things that happened why the U.S. lost it. And it actually reminds me in some ways of what happened against Greece in 2006. And I do feel like if I'm lucky enough to still be having this job in 18 years, like I, or whatever, however long it's been since 2006.
17 years.
I was giving interviews to Greek media this week about the 2006 game. And like, I was watching a documentary that FIBA produced, and with guys who played in that game for Greece, who have full heads of gray hair and wrinkles. It was kind of a scary moment for me about my mortality. But I feel like I could be talking about this game, Lithuanian or other media outlets, in 18 years if I'm so lucky to be still around, because it was such a special thing that happened in this game. There were so many things that happened, not to take anything away from Lithuania, but in that game that Greece beat the U.S. in, which the score was almost comparable, you know, the U.S. giving up 110 points in a 40-minute game is unacceptable. They gave up over 110 points back in 2006 to Greece, and in that game against Greece, as well as Greece played, and as flawed as the U.S. was in that particular game, and then, you know, the U.S. didn't lose for 13 years in international play, but in that game, Greece threw in some shots that were ridiculous, shots that had no business going in, because that's what happens when you get upset. Mm-hmm. You know, for a team to beat you like this, you have to have something like that to happen. And that happened in this game. You know, Imantas Benzidis. Sorry, Imantas, if I pronounced it. Late in the, you know, with less than 2 minutes to go, the Team USA played 23.99 seconds of great defense. And Lithuania was inbounding the ball with 3 seconds left, and it went to my man in the corner, and Anthony Edwards slapped the ball away from it. And with like a second on the clock, he picked it up and literally threw it at the basket, and it went in. Now, look, I don't know this guy. Maybe he throws it at the basket all the time and it goes in. That was a 1-in-10 shot and it broke the US's back. That's not why they lost the game. There was also some weird officiating decisions, but that's not why they lost the game. But that's what happens to like get you over the hump. But Anthony Edwards tonight had left at least 10 points out there, despite going 14 of 26. He had a breakaway that he got on a loose ball that they ruled the shot clock violation.
That was a huge call. That was a huge call in the game because they were flying back with a bunch of momentum and that totally sidetracked them for a bit.
Yeah, I want to completely underline that.
Not saying that's why. Obviously, that's not why they lost the game either. It just was a significant
play. And most of these listeners probably didn't see this game, but Ant was pressuring the heck out of the ball near midcourt. The guy fumbled the ball away with 1 second on the clock. Ant scooped the ball up as the shot clock went off, went down and put a layup in. They ruled it off because it was they said that he didn't have possession. It was really close. In the NBA, they would have let it go probably.
Oh, definitely. That would have been a layup in the NBA okay. For sure.
All right. So they take the 2 points off the board. Then the U.S. gets the ball at half court because of where the shot clock violation happened. And this makes no sense. I learn about FIBA every day. For some reason, when that happens, even though it's a new possession, you only get 14 seconds on the shot clock.
What?
The U.S. had no idea.
That is.
And they, I know, man. Steve Kerr admitted after the game, he screwed up. He didn't know.
They take off the 10 seconds you get to move the ball up to half court. Why? Good question, but that's why.
Okay. So they run a play over 14 seconds. Anthony Edwards gets the ball wide open on the wing. He's about to put up a three. Now, maybe he makes it, maybe he doesn't. Shot clock violation goes off. I know I was surprised. I was like, that wasn't 24 seconds because it wasn't. So that's potentially a three-point swing right there, at least a two-point swing that would have been his. Yeah. There was another time where he had a layup and they called the travel. And they have called some travel on the U.S. team. I mean, I guess they're travels, but like, I didn't even fault him for that. He got a free layup. They called the travel. It's happened like three times. I don't know. It's different officials, so he must be traveling. But
It's a lot of ref talk for the refs not being the problem.
I'm not saying any of the calls were quote unquote wrong.
I'm just kidding.
The refs weren't the problem. There was another time where he got fouled. There's another time where he got fouled and he had a total uncontested bunny layup because the foul was like, you know, they bumped him and he missed that layup. I mean, he makes it 90% of the time in that spot. Then he missed both free throws. He could have had a 3-point play. He had no points. There was other, those are just the ones that were just weird. There were other open shots he had that he missed, you know? So he could have had 45 and, Jaren Jackson gets 6 rebounds in this game, just gets his average in the NBA. The U.S. wins. A couple of those go for Anthony Edwards. The U.S., I think, wins. So there was a lot that happened where the U.S. could have won, but they didn't win. So, like, I don't think that they need to sit here and say, oh, my gosh, what a failure that this team is. What a terrible construction. Whatever. This is a disaster. Because that's what happened against Greece. It was a full-on disaster. That is absolutely not the case in my view here. This team is absolutely still able to win it. I think they could even beat Lithuania if they play them, which they could. They can't play them.
Well,
now.
Yeah. I mean, of course, they could beat Lithuania. I mean, this is the way for people who didn't watch this or who don't like pay a ton of attention to it. The best way to think about this is the U.S. is a one seed in the NCAA tournament, and they are going to be pretty heavy favorites to win every game. But especially now at this point, you know, they got very lucky. It's funny the way the draw broke because they lost. And ended up on the other side of the draw. The three teams in their pod to go to the finals are Italy, Germany, and Latvia. And they'll probably play Germany in the semifinals, but they avoid playing Canada till the finals. They avoid playing Slovenia till the finals. They avoid playing Lithuania again till the finals. They avoid playing Serbia again till the finals. And for as good as Germany's been, you'd probably take at least two or three of those teams over Germany if you were picking who you thought was going to win going through. So they actually caught a bit of a break in losing, but yeah, certainly they're more than good enough to win three games. They just have to, have to do the things that they've been doing against the high level teams to win.
Having said that, by the way, if Nikola Jokic was in this tournament, Serbia would be the favorite at this point. That's number one. Number two, if Now the most important thing I look at is how these teams are rebounding, and Italy is a better rebounding team than Serbia. So you are correct that they really didn't get quote unquote penalized for this loss. They were already in the quarterfinals. They qualified for the Olympics. They still get 2 days off between because the other teams have to travel in. The teams have to travel in from Japan, Okinawa, and Jakarta, Indonesia. They have to fly in on Monday. So the teams that have been here in Manila play on Tuesday, which means that the other teams don't play till Wednesday. So the U.S. is going to play in the quarterfinals. And if they win, they're going to get 2 days off. Whereas the team that they will play, if the team that they'll play on Friday, potentially will only have Latvia has been here. I think Latvia has been in. Anyway, they have an advantage. So, but Italy is a better rebounding team than Serbia in this tournament. And rebounding is everything. So, but you're right. They just need to get some better play. And I would say that after the game, being, you know, with the team, you don't get to go in the locker room at FIBA. You get to talk to some of the players, and, you know, talking with Steve Kerr. I would say they're obviously disappointed, but they're not discouraged. But the last two games have been first a yellow flag and then a red flag, because they didn't play that great against Montenegro. They ended up winning, but they didn't play that great. But by the way, Montenegro played very well, and Lithuania played very well, and they should expect Italy to play well. That's what happens at this stage.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Okay. I did not get to see the Canada game because I was working the United States game. It was being played in Indonesia. Canadians were behind the Spanish and came back late and won the game. It was an enormous win for Canada. And an emotional win for Jordi Fernandez, their head coach, because he is Spanish. He's from the Barcelona area. So he knocked out his home country, the defending World Cup champions. They didn't have their best team, but still, they're the defending World Cup champs. So
and
that means
Eurobasket champs.
And defending Eurobasket champs from a year ago. So that means Spain is going home. Australia, the bronze medalists from Tokyo, are going home. France, the silver medalists from Tokyo, are going home. Canada made it by the skin of their teeth and qualified for the Olympics, which they haven't played in since 2000. It was a huge moment for Canada in a comeback win, and you guys watched it, and so you can tell me what happened.
I mean, Dylan Brooks, clutch shot making, just like you'd expect, baby.
Dylan, I'm sure he's very disappointed that you weren't there to talk to him about it after
Dylan,
the game.
Dylan, not a villain, came through for Canada. Obviously, SGA, he single-handedly outscored Spain in the fourth quarter. But Dylan Brooks made some huge shots down the stretch. He also had one moment where he grabs a rebound. He's trying to like weave through traffic and go behind the back and committed a terrible turnover. But he more than made up for it. And it was a skin of the teeth type of win. I mean, they were down double figures in this. Was it into the fourth quarter, Bontemps? They were definitely down double figures in the second.
Oh, yeah. They went on a 23-7 run to retake the lead in the game.
Yeah. Billy Hernan Gomez, who Yeah, played several years in the NBA, was with the Pelicans last year, is going back to Spain, playing for FC Barcelona. You know, a guy who never established himself as like a consistent rotation player in the NBA, had some bright spots, but dude, he's one hell of a FIBA player. Was Eurobasket MVP last year. Like Canada couldn't handle him. But SGA and Dylan Brooks basically took this thing down the stretch.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander checked into the game with 4:34 to go in Canada down six. He either scored or assisted every point they had the rest of the game. He took over the game. Mm-hmm. Dylan Brooks hit a gigantic shot off a pass from Shai to tie it up with about 2 minutes to go. Big time shot. We have clowned on Dylan Brooks a whole bunch. This was probably might have been the biggest game of his life. For them to win this game, to go to the Olympics, these young guys on this Canadian team have been part of this whole thing coming up. And he had, I think he went 3 for 3 from three and had an absolutely massive game. RJ Barrett had fouled out. It was basically those two guys with the ball in their hands down the stretch. And I mean, he ended up with, he had 24 points on 8 for 12 shooting, went 3 for 3 from three, which, as we know, not exactly a normal Dylan game, but he was great. And Shai was transcended down the stretch. And this game was not going well for them basically the whole time. Rudy Fernandez was up to all sorts of shenanigans. And the Spanish team, even though they don't have all their number one guys, yeah. Sergio Scariolo has been the coach for this whole run, been there forever. They have all this experience. They've been in these spots 1,000 times. They were up 10 at halftime. They were up. They absorbed a run in the third quarter. We're back up 10 at the start of the fourth.
I mean, it looks Santi Aldama played great.
Yeah, Santi Aldama was great.
He was fantastic. Canada got back in the game. They were down 10 at halftime. They immediately get right back in the game. It was a lot like the American game. Had a huge run to start of third quarter. Then Santi Aldama hits back-to-back threes and then dunked over Kelly Olynyk in three straight possessions and pushed the lead right back up to 10 again. And at the end of the third quarter, and you're like, man, that was it. Like the Spanish got it back under control. They're probably going to lock this thing up. And full credit to Shai and Dylan Brooks for pulling this thing out at the end. And, you know, for a Canadian team that has lost in Venezuela several years ago and had a chance to qualify for the World Cup and or lost to Venezuela, I should say, in Mexico City, and has had a lot of disappointments and not getting over the hump. This group to get over the hump, like this was the big thing for them. Obviously, they want to win the gold medal in this tournament. They think they can win the tournament, but this has all been building towards them getting to Paris and finally qualifying for the Olympics. And that was a pretty huge moment for them to pull that off the way they did.
It was still this close to going in overtime. Alex Abrines.
Did you see the shot at the end, Brian?
No, I haven't seen anything yet.
Alex Abrines, briefly a member of the Thunder, but a long time, high quality pro over there in Spain. I think it was Lou Dort that got a bit of a contest on it, but he got a pretty good look from about 35 feet at the buzzer. And that thing was online and it looked like it was going to go and it caught just enough of the front rim not to go down. But I mean,
it was maybe two inches short. And that was after Canada had been up by 4 or 6 with mm-hmm. under 30 seconds to go. It looked like they had it won. And then Spain hit a couple threes, kept it close. And then it was that close at the end, but ultimately the Canadians survive. And now Spain has to qualify for the World Cup next summer the Olympics. I mean,
yeah, Spain has to qualify. They'll still be in decent position to do so, but it's unclear who's going to be able to play for them.
Well, there could be a lot of teams having to qualify. I mean, if this breaks in a certain way, either Serbia or Lithuania is definitely going to have to qualify. Slovenia, if they lose to Canada, is going to have to qualify. There's some really high, Germany could have to qualify if they lose to Latvia. There's some really high level teams that are still left that are, you know, on a knife's edge to get in. And you mentioned the Dominicans. I know Canada ended up winning the game. If Canada had lost this game, that would have probably been a pretty long few weeks for the Dominican team when they were in a dogfight with Puerto Rico on Friday. And if they had won that game, they'd be in the quarters and they would have had a shot to get into the Olympics, which obviously would have been a pretty massive.
Yeah, had Canada lost this game, Brazil would have gone from the other spot from the Americas. There was a possibility coming into Sunday that five teams from the Americas could have made the final eight, which would have made it basically a double runoff to win the title and then get one of the spots for the World Cup. Two teams from the Americas make it. As it happened, Puerto Rico, the Dominican, and Brazil all lost on Sunday. So Canada and the US.
European teams made it.
Six of the eight teams are European teams, plus US and Canada. So that's what it comes down to. So yeah, so it is still alive. I said, I think last week on the pod, that if they both teams kept winning, that Canada and the US would have met in the final. That was not true. I had a mistake and I misspoke. It would have been the semifinal, but hey, guess what? They both lost. And so now the bracket is set up that final is still there. It seems kind of, I'm not giving the US anything at this point, but the US lost.
No prediction.
No.
They would have faced in the final if they both won, but US finished second and Canada won the group. So that's how it ended up this way.
Yeah. So they, 1 week from today, we could be talking about the US Canada final, but there's a lot that can happen. And Canada already lost once and almost lost tonight. And the US is looked shaky in two games in a row. So still some big teams left in there.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. The NFL schedule drops this week, and you can be there to catch all the action live and in person with Vivid Seats. Experience every touchdown, every tackle, every eye-popping play of your favorite team. And to kick it off, Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN, is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP. Download the app or visit vividseats.com today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. But one team that has secured their spot in Paris is something I did this weekend that was something that I'll remember for a long time. On Saturday, Team USA was off. All the teams basically in the winner's bracket were off. All the games were on Sunday to set everything up. So Saturday was a day for the loser's bracket at the World Cup. And it's way more than the loser's bracket, because when the teams go out of competition, they're then fighting to qualify for, depending on, you know, their what region in the world they're from, they could still be fighting for qualifying for the Olympics. Because yes, winning the World Cup's what everybody's here for, but qualifying at the Olympics, the seven bids that are given out here are super important. And so I went and saw the South Sudan play against Angola. And the South Sudan has been a country since 2011, but they went into civil war. They've pretty much been in civil war for most of the years between the mid-1950s and now. Had a few periods where they haven't been. There were two major Sudanese civil wars, and then South Sudan became a country in 2011, and there was a South Sudanese civil war between about 2013 and 2020. I'm not going to get into all the politics of it, but it's still not stable. Right. But South Sudan has been a country for 12 years, but they've not been a functioning that you could worry about representing your country in sport, except basically since 2020. And this team has basically been put together by Lou Aldang, who is South Sudanese by birth. And the one thing about this team, some of the names who are on this team, you were going to recognize, almost the entire team is players who are refugees from the Sudan, or who were the children of people who had to leave the Sudan during war. You go down and look at the bios and learn about every player on this roster. It is one long tragedy when it comes to their relationship with Sudan. I'm talking about, I don't have all the notes in front of me. I should pull it up, but guys, Wenyen Gabriel, for example, who you may know because he played for the Lakers. He played for the Blazers. He's played for some other teams. Wenyen Gabriel on the team. Went to Kentucky. Wenyen Gabriel was 2 weeks old when his family fled Sudan, and he lived in somewhere else in Europe. I think it might have been Egypt. And then he moved to New Hampshire, to a sanctuary city, Manchester, New Hampshire, when he was young. A number of these players.
And Lou Alding.
One of the players. Yeah. Lou Alding ended up in London, but then ended up in New Jersey. Lou Alding, well, I don't want to get ahead of myself here. Some of the players ended up in Iowa. Some of them ended up in Minnesota. Some of the players ended up in Australia. There's a player on the team from Perth whose family had 7 children, and they were Sudanese refugees.
An Adelaide 36er, Sunday Deck.
That's right, Sunday Deck. Mm-hmm. Great name.
Yeah, nice guy.
Kamon Maluk, who was 16 years old. He was a refugee in Uganda during the South Sudanese Civil War. He's 16 years old, and he was living in Uganda. He is a potential draft pick in the 2025 NBA draft. He's 7'2" as a 16-year-old, was playing and contributing in the World Cup.
He's a potential number one overall pick, apparently.
I don't know if I would say that at this point.
He ain't going to be picked ahead of Cooper Flagg. So he might be a potential number two pick.
He's a potential high lottery pick.
For sure. Yes. For sure. Jonathan, if you're interested in him, Jonathan wrote about him. He and Kevin did a story on players to watch in the tournament. Jonathan wrote about him a bunch. And I would encourage everybody to go read Brian's story on South Sudan winning, because he had all these various stories of people in there, which is, it was pretty remarkable to read all of them.
So Lou Alding, 3 years ago, became the president of their federation. By the way, they only really became safe to operate. I mean, I don't know everything that happened on the ground there, but they may have had a team, but they were in civil war. So I don't think they were fielding teams. So Lou Alding, after there's a ceasefire in the civil war, Lou Alding takes over presidency of the federation. He played for Great Britain, because Sudan didn't have a basketball team, but he played for Great Britain when he was a international player while playing in the NBA. And he took part in the 2012 Olympics for Great Britain, but now he's trying to help his home nation. And he basically funded this thing with his own money for years. And they had to qualify. So when Lou Alding came to the United States, he came to Blair Academy in New Jersey. And he was a freshman. There was a senior there named Royal Ivy. You may know Royal Ivy, played the NBA for 10 years for a bunch of teams, journeyman guard, and has been an assistant coach for a handful of teams. He's now with the Houston Rockets. Was known as one of Kevin Durant's best friends from when they played on the Thunder. And the idea was, you know, that teams kept hiring him because they thought they were going to get Durant. All right. But Royal Ivy is a high class, high character individual. And when Lou Alding came to the United States as a teenager, he didn't even have basketball shoes. His first basketball shoes were given him by Royal Ivy. So Lou Alding got this job 3 years ago. He called Royal Ivy, even though he is not of Sudanese descent, and said, "Will you coach this team?" And Royal Ivy was telling the story about like his first practice they had. They had some event in Nairobi, Kenya. And like the only court they could practice on was like a concrete court. Sunday Desh's brother, Solomon Desh, who's an agent based in Australia, was telling me that there are almost no indoor courts in all of South Sudan. All the courts are outdoor courts. There may be one indoor court, and they only have a few handful of outdoor courts. He was talking about how last summer, when they were preparing to try to qualify for the World Cup, they were practicing outdoors, like in Tunisia or something. And part of the court was flooded. They couldn't even use part of the court. And he was like looking up, and there were like eagles circling their practice. That was a year ago. That was not in 1994. That was not in 2018. That was a year ago. They made the African Championships for the first time ever in 2021. Afro Basket, it's called, like Euro Basket in Europe. They finished 7th. But that was a miracle. They finished 7th. They get in, basically Lou Alding funding them. They qualify playing across Europe. And, you know, they have some players. I talked to about them before this event. Their best player is probably Carlique Jones, who is from Cincinnati, the child of Sudanese. He's of Sudanese descent. His parents, at least one of his parents, I think both, were Sudanese refugees. He's from Cincinnati. G League Player of the Year is on the Bulls roster. He was awesome. He was one of the best players in the tournament. He was great. Wenyen Gabriel was great. Mariel Shylock, who's a sort of a 3-4 who had who played for a little while for the Philadelphia 76ers, who's another, he grew up in Canada, the son of refugees. He played and they won. And this game was played at 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. There was maybe 500 people in the building. It was played at the Araneta Coliseum here in the Philippines, in Manila, which is where the Thrilla in Manila was. So they're playing in this, they've renovated it, but it's this sort of historic old venue. There's not that many people there. There was about maybe 30 South Sudanese fans, and there was about 20 of them waving South Sudanese flags. And to see them, you know, they won a game in the consolation bracket, basically. They call it the classification bracket, on a Saturday afternoon, and weeping, Lou Aldang crying, Royal Ivy crying, these players talking about how this is the accomplishment of their lifetime. And South Sudan is going to go to the Olympics. There's 12 teams go to the Olympics. They won the African bid by beating Angola. And there's never been anybody ever represent the South Sudan ever in the Olympics. There's been some of their athletes who've been on the refugee team. I think there was a refugee team once or twice, but they've never had anybody say, we are from South Sudan. They qualified for that. And so that's the thing about the World Cup. Yes, it's not the Olympics. Yes, it's played during football season. Yes, the best players aren't playing in it necessarily at the top. This is the kind of stuff that happens at these type of events. And to go and listen to Lou Aldang talk about how it's an underdog story, and here's the other thing, guys, Manute Bol was South Sudanese. He is from, you may have heard about this, he is from the Dinka tribe. The Dinka, the descendants and the members of the Dinka tribe are the tallest people in the world. You go to the South Sudan, I've never been to South Sudan, but you go to the South Sudan and there are 6'8" people walking around like 5'10" people in the United States. Africa has been a continent of potential for a long time. I'm not saying, I don't know what's going to happen to South Sudan. I'm going to say this though. There's a 16-year-old South Sudanese kid who's 7'2" and looks like he can play.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say something else. The MVP of the NBA is African. The two-time MVP of the NBA, Giannis Antetokounmpo, has a Greek name. He's African. Mm-hmm. Victor Wembanyama, the number one pick, one of the highest, most exciting prospects in the NBA history, is half African. His father is Congolese. He's of Congolese descent. His great-grandfather was over 7 foot, living in Congo. If you don't think that there's the talent swell coming from Africa, I got news for you. It's coming from Africa. And to see, and all these guys, they're all smart. They're, you know, they all pick themselves up and their families pick themselves up. Like most of them have college degrees. They speak multiple languages. They're very eloquent. Like they're something for the country to be proud of. So anyway, I'm sorry, I've gone on a little while on this. It was a really great thing to be a part of. I was so happy I was able to amplify their story. There was a few media members there, not many. There was a few amplifying their story. So it was a pretty awesome thing. And no matter what happens with Team USA, although I've had an absolute blast covering Team USA, the rain in Manila is a little much. It's a little much. We're a little bit out of control with the rain here, but I've had a great time in Manila covering Team USA. No matter what happens this next week, that'll be a good memory. My opportunity to see the South Sudanese do this, to see them celebrate and know what it means to their country when they are a 10-year-old country, basically, was amazing. And so I am very much looking forward to seeing them compete in Paris next year. And they ain't going to be no pushover because they make threes. They're huge. They make threes. I think they're second in total threes per game in the tournament. They might even be first. I mean, they were right there with Lithuania coming into this game. They make a lot of shots. They play very fast. You know, obviously Royal Ivy is, you know, he's a good coach. He knows how to coach them. They draw fouls. They're a team that you can root for. Okay, I've gone on too long.
And they've got a 7'2" kid who knows how much 16. Better. Yeah, who knows how much better he is at 17. I mean, who knows how much this kid might be able to develop over the next year. Look,
I talked to him. He's not shaving yet. He may not be done growing.
And obviously there's a lot of reasons. This is just a great underdog story. You laid all those out there really well, but it's also a huge deal just in terms of like basketball being something that kids can look to there as opportunity. And this is, you know, that's why the NBA is invested like they have with the Basketball Africa League and with the NBA Academy over there, because there is a ton of potential over there. And it's, you know, it's obviously in the best interest of the NBA to do everything within their power to give that potential a chance to develop.
Well, and also something Masai Ujiri has spent years and years and years working on too, with his Giants of Africa program across the continent. And, you know, stories like this are why we all watch sports, right? Like, this is just it. Like, I was reading Brian's story yesterday. It's just the coolest thing to read through all these guys, all the stuff their families had to go through, then to get a chance to represent their country and be in this kind of situation and get this kind of opportunity and come through the way they did. I mean, this is like a Disney movie to be a company person for a second. Like, you couldn't make up a script to line up with the way this has played out. And, you know, Luol Deng basically funding the whole thing. Like, I my jaw actually dropped when I was reading your story and you were talking about them practicing outside. Like, we were talking a couple weeks ago about teams like Germany having to fly commercial to to their group stage games, right? And we're talking about a team that's qualified for the Olympics where they basically can't get access to an indoor gym to practice. Like, it's a staggering accomplishment. And it is just a really cool thing. And look, like you said, Team USA is a blast for us to cover because you get to be around a lot more than normal in the NBA. Everybody's relaxed. It's the summertime. Everybody's excited to be part of it and play a different role and be around different guys. But yes, you'll remember being there to cover Team USA, but we've seen Team USA win a lot of gold medals or go deep in tournaments. We'll see that again. Lithuania beating US to Team USA doesn't happen every day. South Sudan qualifying for the Olympics doesn't happen every day. Canada qualifying for the Olympics, obviously, at least for the last 24 years, hasn't happened. So that's the stuff that makes these tournaments cool to cover for me, is seeing stuff like that that we don't see every day and seeing how much it means to all of these guys who obviously are, a lot of these guys are playing in the NBA or playing overseas and making a lot of money and doing a lot of stuff outside of this, but then they go play for their country and get to do really cool things. And it's really neat to see.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens with them next year. We got a lot more to go on the, in the World Cup. We will talk more about the NBA. I know I said we talked about the NBA. Well, you talked about the World Cup.
We're talking about the NBA. There's all sorts of NBA players in the World Cup.
Yeah.
Also, like, what are we going to talk about? Hey, is James Harden going to get traded? Is Dame coming?
Thank God. Thank God we've had the World Cup to talk about.
Exactly.
Instead of that.
Yeah, the times.
McMahon mentioned it earlier. Right. Big game on Wednesday. Canada, Slovenia.
Big game.
Hey. Yeah. Luka had 23, 6, and 6 tonight, right?
And they got smoked by Germany.
Yeah. Schroeder had 24 and 10 assists, I think. So, yeah.
Should be a fun quarterfinal. And huge shout out to Latvia. No Porzingis, first time in the World Cup, making the quarterfinals. They beat Germany, could very well qualify for the Olympics. Be a pretty remarkable story.
Look, I've embarrassed myself on the Lithuanian players' names. I studied the Latvian roster. They could play the U.S. if they're playing against Germany. I got a lot of work to do. I mean, and by the way, they got contributions. To do.
Yeah. Oh, hey, that number 66. They got a 66. They got a 55. It's a very good, very unique, jersey number roster.
Yeah. But, that was Ant Edwards has been just, I might move to Minnesota to start covering Ant Edwards on a daily basis. He's that.
Nebraska, basically the same thing.
You can get there in about 45 minutes.
47 minutes.
Can't watch him on TV, though.
About 75 times. You're not kidding. He should be on more national TV. Anyway, Ant's two favorite quotes, by the way, are dope and for show. Like, just Ant, like 35
you.
Points
you and,
tonight.
You and Ant, two peas in a pod.
Anyway, Ant was talking about the shot that I mentioned earlier by our guy. What was it? VK. And he's like, shout out to 22, man. That was his. Hey, Ant, what'd you think about that? Shout out to 22. He's like, shout him out. I couldn't have said it better. Shout out Lithuania and shout out Lithuanian fans who there was only maybe it was like 300 or 400 of them, and they were terrific.
I was wondering how they'd travel to Manila. Obviously, that's a long, long journey.
We talked about it before the tournament.
Yeah, because
they go everywhere.
There were thousands of them when I saw Lithuania and Cologne, and they were loud.
Yeah.
And I guess it's a little more difficult to get the drums from, you know, overseas than it is, you know, if you're just going across the continent.
Yeah, in Japan in 2006, which was the first time I encountered the Lithuanians, there was a pretty big contingent there. They let them bring their drums then.
The arena band.
I don't know. No, I don't know that for sure. I'm just saying they had their drums back when I saw them. I also will say that they sang their national anthem loudly and proudly.
Oh yeah.
They were ready to go from the moment. So they had a great experience.
You want me to prep you for the Slovenians' favorite chant? Skodorna skace ni slove. Hey, hey, hey. Skodorna skace ni slove. Hey, hey, hey. Basically translates to, if you're not jumping, you're not Slovenian. Hey, hey, hey. But they spell hey, H-E-J over there. So you got.
I like Latvia.
Slovenian facts left and right.
Latvia.
Right, back to that. Good. It's a full circle pod. We're back to the simple claps. Simple claps and simple chants.
All right. Not simple game for the U.S. Okay. Thank you guys for, let's say thank you. It's 3 a.m. in the morning. You should be thanking me.
We do every week. Thank you.
You should be thanking.
We're just glad to be the collective with Windhorse.
Along for the ride.
That's correct. All right. Everybody travel safe. Thank you for listening. Have a good week.
Adios, amigos.